claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Well, this is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal, where we have more nonsense coming from Texas. We even have photographs where you can see a Masonic symbol in the back of one of the vehicles, which I think is intended to tell us something. Turns out that there was about 2 months earlier a drill. Guess what? A drill at Salvador Ramos's high school. Or they were pretending to be dead. This is a typical sequence where they conduct a drill. They did this similarly, of course, in Sandy Hook. It actually was a drill that was presented as mass murder in relation to what happened there with the fictional character Adam Lanza. Here we have a report. Haunting images show students pretending to be dead during a recent active shooter drill at the Texas Mass Murderers High School, conducted by the cop husband of one of the slain teachers. We're supposed to believe all this nonsense. It's just unbelievably bad that this should be, well, we should be played so massively, but there it is. The Uvalde School District cop and husband of slain fourth grade teacher Eva Bareilles held the chillingly prophetic drill on March 22nd at Uvalde High School. Wow. And we get photos. We see the cops in the hallway. We have the students pretending to be dead. We have the cops doing an active shooter training drill. They're all conferring. One photo shows a fake attacker confronting one of the officers who points an orange handgun at him. The wife taught fourth graders. My beautiful cousin, writes her cousin. Such a devastating day for us all. My heart is shattered into 1,000 pieces. Cutest, sweetest person, take cute dogs on walks. All for pathos. We're all supposed to be very affected by the emotions of this. Except it's all fraudulent. Guess what? They got the a Texas teacher victim, actually. Victoria Soto appears to be right there as another now a Texas teacher. So she was at Sandy Hook, where she allegedly cramped 15 squirming first graders into a 3x4 bathroom with a door that swung inward. Now, if you figure each of those first graders weigh 50 pounds. That's 750 pounds of squirming teenager, plus Victoria, another 100 pounds, 850 pounds in a 3x4 bathroom with a door swinging in. You believe that? A single NFL tackle at 350 would have filled it up. This is just ridiculous. Well, guess what? She appears to be not only a victim at Sandy Hook, but a victim at Uvalde. How is this even better? We got two different fathers for the same child, one on each network, one on CNN, one on what, MSNBC. How ridiculous can you get? How does Emory Garza have a different father on each of the networks? Now, when they commit these blunders, they go figure out some way out. So now they're claiming, oh, actually, she did have two fathers. One's a real father. The other is her stepfather. Meanwhile, of course, we got all the dope about the Uvalde High School active shooter course. March 21st, right? Just April, May, just about 2 months before. You can register, sign up. Says you got to check in. It's just like Sandy Hook. There was a big portable sign saying everyone must check in. Meanwhile, it turns out the school district police chief, Peter Arredondo, ordered cops not to engage a Texas gunman. He's a former 911 dispatcher with an unremarkable career, elected to the city council just days before the massacre. I mean, this was incredibly stupid. This was violating policy, but it's reminiscent. We got parallels here with Parkland, where Sheriff Scott Israel wouldn't allow his deputies to enter into Parkland, but Scott Israel had a really good reason. They had a fake shooter inside there who was firing a sim gun with simulated ammunition made out of beeswax and laundry detergent. It'll make a welt, but it won't rip through your skin. So he didn't want his deputies, who were unaware that this was all a stage event at Parkland, to go in, since they might shoot the guy who was the fake shooter. But it's also like Sandy Hook. Remember the mythical Adam Lanza, who was supposed to be over 6 feet tall and weigh 112 pounds of string bean, but he was supposed to have lugged all this equipment into the elementary school after shooting his mother and then going to Sandy Hook to kill 20 first graders and six teachers, one of whom, Victoria Soto, turns up amazingly in Texas as a school teacher there at Uvalde. I mean, give me a break. Not only that, but then here we have in Texas, he's supposed to have shot his grandmother. This is, you know, to bring in the elderly crowd. Shot his grandmother and then go to the school where he shoots second, third, and fourth graders, right? Not to be redundant. But there was a sign at Sandy Hook, everyone must check in, just as it stated right in the FEMA drill, which we discovered and I published as Appendix A in the book, Nobody Died at Sandy Hook. It was a FEMA drill to promote gun control, 2015, second edition, 2016. It looks as though participants had to check in here. During a bombshell presser, the Texas Department of Public Safety head Steve McCross slammed Chief Pete Arredondo for failing to engage the 18-year-old Salvador Ramos, mistakenly believing the teen had finished his killing spree and was hiding from the cops. With the benefit of hindsight, from where I'm sitting now, of course, it was not the right decision. It was a wrong decision, period. Not only that, but we have a timeline that raises all kinds of questions. Believe it or not, one of the teachers left an open door, a door propped open at 11:27. Ramos is driving a Ford 150. You see him advertised all the time. This is Ford's best-selling pickup truck. I regard this as product placement. There were two different stories, of course. One, that he crashed his truck into the school building itself. The other, that he found it, he lost control and wound up in a ditch. We have photos of the truck in the ditch. That's at 11:28. So it looks like the timing is pretty remarkable. The teacher opens the door at 11:27 and he's crashing his truck at 11:28. He shoots at two people at a funeral home. This is pretty bizarre. That's across the street. Then he shoots at the school at 11:31. A school cop drives past him at 11:32. He enters the school at 11:33. Just 5 or 6 minutes after the teacher had propped open the door to give him easy access, he fires 100 rounds into two classrooms at 11:33. Three cops follow, and then a fourth at 11:35. There are not 19 cops in the hallway by 12:03. Now, let me just say, this kid is supposed to have bought two AR-15s that were very high-end. These are expensive weapons there's some accounts that are giving a different figure, but these are a couple grand, these weapons. And he's supposed to have been lugging some 1,400 rounds of ammo. Does anyone have any idea how much that would weigh? 1,400 rounds of ammo? So this has major plausibilities right from the beginning. Then the kid from room 112 calls 911 and says there are multiple deaths. This is at 1210. The SWAT team arrives at 1215. A kid in room 112 again says nine students are still alive at 1216. Then in room 111, a kid says he shot the door. That's at 1226. Room 111 kid says, please send up police now. Breach finally the classroom and kill the gunman at 1250. This is a pretty ridiculous scenario. According to law enforcement officials who spoke anonymously, the agents were puzzled why they were being held back and not allowed to engage. McCraw, now this is a Texas state officer, asserts Arredondo, who is the chief for the school district, made a miscalculation, assuming it had become an a barricade event. Arredondo, 50, became the focus of backlash from parents wondering if their children could have been saved. And by the way, there was a tremendous hassle between parents who were in the vicinity and the cops, who weren't, the parents were insisting the cops do something, but the cops wouldn't do anything. In fact, they actually assaulted the parents. They were spraying the parents. They were putting handcuffs on the parents. We have, here's a parent, and Jelly Rose Gomez told the Wall Street Journal the police were doing nothing. They were just standing outside the fence. They weren't going in or running anywhere. She had two children in second and third grade, drove supposedly 40 miles after hearing of the attack. She was among the desperate parents who engaged the police with increasing urgency. Eventually, federal marshals put her in handcuffs, told her she was under arrest for intervening in an active investigation. Believe it or not, she was able to convince a Uvalde officer she knew to be free. And she took the opportunity to move from the crowd, jump the school fence, ran inside the school where she rescued her children herself. She said other parents were trying to get their kids but were tackled and even pepper sprayed. Engel Garza, whose daughter was killed, so we're told, were handcuffed after trying to run into the school when he heard that a girl called Amory had been shot. Garza later told his heartbreaking story to Anderson Cooper. Anderson is always Johnny on the spot. I understand Anderson was even there in advance of the Sandy Hook shooting so he could cover it immediately, that the media were there before the event. Looks like a pretty close facsimile right down here in Texas. He explained he arrived on the scene. He tried to help a young girl covered in blood because he's a trained medic. This is Angel Garva. The girl explained she wasn't hurt, and the blood was from her best friend, Amory. It was then that blood came from his own daughter, where he learned that she was among those who died. Amory. Let me see, was this the same one we had, the two parents? Yeah, Amory Garza. Wow, two different fathers going and making emotional pitches on television. How embarrassing is that? Meanwhile, experts see little change coming for gun control, but won't be for lack of trying. The Democrats, by the way, had a host of motives, I believe, for having this phony event take place. Remember, it wiped off of the front page the Sussman trial where Robbie Mook, her campaign manager, had identified Hillary Clinton as having authorized a smear that Donald Trump was in collusion with Vladimir Putin. Hillary was identified. So he got on the front page of the New York Post one day. Hillary is fingered. She did it. And the next day, photographed, perfectly framed photographs of all these little kids who are supposed to have died. Talk about changing the subject. Also, of course, with inflation, gas prices, supply chain problems, everything else, the unrestricted immigration, Biden's poll numbers in the toilet, they're trying to do everything they can to get on what they think is firm Democratic ground with abortion and now this another school shooting, and I guarantee you 100% this is fake. We had here once again, by the way, as we had at Sandy Hook, as we had at Parkland, as we even had in Boston, no surge of EMTs into the building, no string of ambulances to rush their little bodies off to hospitals, no medevac helicopter called. This is all completely fraudulent. And real medical facilities won't allow their equipment or personnel to be involved in staged events because there may be a bona fide medical emergency that they would be unable to cover if they became mere participants or actors on the scene. This week's fatal shooting, so we're told, resulted in renewed calls for the left for stricter gun control. They seem not to understand, however, that gun ownership and homicide rates are inversely related. They're claiming the more guns, the more gun violence, but the facts of the matter are precisely the opposite, even worldwide. The countries with the highest gun ownership, which until Canada, has confiscated guns from its residents, was North America, highest gun ownership by far, lowest homicide rate by far. Other countries like Brazil, no gun ownership, very high homicide rate. In Africa, low gun ownership, high homicide rate. In Russia, low gun ownership, high. There are plenty of ways to kill people. In the UK, for example, in London, when they banned guns, they had an epidemic of knife attacks. So they banned knives. And I said, what's next? Potato peelers? And yeah, that's what they did next. They banned potato peelers. This is incredibly stupid. The Democrats are ignorant or they're deliberately maliciously lying. They don't even talk about the defensive use of guns, which occurs at a very high rate, millions of times every year, saving an estimated 200,000 lives. They don't take that, they don't factor that in. They don't tell you, of course, if we take away guns, Americans are not going to be able to defend themselves. We're going to lose 200,000 more American lives. They don't tell you that because they're phonies and frauds. And this Chris Murphy from Connecticut is making all these impassioned pleas. Well, Chris Murphy is a stooge. Connecticut may be the most corrupt state in the union. It's unbelievably bad. There are reasons why Sandy Hook took place in Connecticut. And believe me, I mean, we know it was fraudulent. I even have now my case before the U.S. Supreme Court. You can go to the SCOTUS webpage and do a search on Fetzer v. Posner. Fetzer v. Posner, and you can download my petition to the Supreme Court and the appendices that support it and even my justification for submitting pro se because I can't afford a lawyer. I am so much in debt. But frankly, at the point when I was contemplating using a lawyer, I wasn't happy with his approach to the case, and by going pro se, I was able to argue it the way I wanted to argue it. Everything from universal background checks and banning assault-style weapons to new age restrictions and even changing the Constitution appear to be fair game. Fat chance. However, the nation is divided politically, and there's limited public pressure for such move. Because of this, experts say there's little chance the left will get its way. A national Gallup poll earlier this year found only 36% of Americans are unhappy with or want stricter gun control. The total of respondents satisfied 41%, dissatisfied in advocating less strict laws, 13%. So you put those together, that's 54%. Who either are satisfied or want even fewer restrictions, or dissatisfied but wanting no change, 7%. That totals altogether 61%. More polling results now from Pew show 38% agree with the Republican position and 37% with the Democrats. In other words, even on gun control, the Republicans have an edge. They also show an historic trend swinging for tighter gun control after previous mass shootings like Columbine, San Diego, and Parkland, but these spikes in favor of stricter gun control proved to be temporary. on one thing, the radical left is correct. There's no question the U.S. is a global outlier in its relationship with firearms. The birth and shaping of the nation is intricately linked to an armed citizenry. And for half of the country, that relationship is a cultural bedrock. Remember, we won the Revolutionary War because Americans were citizen soldiers and took up arms against the enemy. The Founding Fathers recognized the importance and enshrined it in the Second Amendment, that our right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. The Supreme Court has upheld that right in a series of decisions, including that you do not have to belong to a militia. Properly understood, they're looking at all American citizens as potential citizen soldiers in a defense of the nation, should it be threatened. This is one reason they want to take our guns, because those very guns that aid our national security can also be used against a tyrannical government. And by God, everyone recognizes the Biden administration is a tyrannical government. The Global Small Arms Survey found 120 guns for every 100 Americans, over double the second place Falkland Islands. Roughly 46% of the world's civilian guns are in the U.S. Gallup polling shows about 44% of adults live in a home with a firearm. I'll bet it's higher. Many aren't willing to admit for fear the government is going to attempt to confiscate their weapons. Ask residents of Chicago or Washington, D.C. how effective their strict gun controls are at curbing violence. Can't we see? Chicago has the most stringent gun control laws in the country, but also the highest gun violence rate. Gun control laws do not work. What we need is more guns, not less. Switzerland's a perfect example. In Switzerland, every family is required by law to own and be trained in firearms, and the crime rate in Switzerland is practically zero. Practically zero. So the Democrats are just moving in the wrong direction. Criminals line up for background checks nowhere on earth. They are unlikely to hand over illegal guns for the greater good. In other words, the radical elements will fail. We had many absurdities at Parkland, by the way, where, you know, we know that, in fact, military-style rifles cause tremendous damage, shatter bones, you know, totally incapacitating. Yet we had Maddie Wilford had wounds, supposedly shot in her chest and abdomen at Parkland. But we got a fake doctor by the name of Dr. Cherubrinko saying, we're talking about large caliber bullets penetrating through the chest and abdomen. Those are serious injuries. Yes, they would have been fatal had any of this been real. And notice he doesn't even understand. The AR-15 fires a .223 caliber bullet. It's only slightly larger than a .22. It's a small caliber. Dr. Nerepruncho said, young people have a tendency to heal very fast. I mean, I'm telling you, this is a joke. This is when the days of being shot at Parkland. He believed Maddie would be physically ready to return to school next week and make a full recovery. Just absurd. Then we get another. Samantha Fuentes, amazingly. She was released from the hospital and is walking and being interviewed by reporters after only 1 week. And her two legs now require only Band-Aids for the AR-15 wounds. Only Band-Aids. And she apparently had to wait 30 minutes in her classroom before SWAT officers arrived. Lucky for her, she didn't bleed out and die. She's all over the news. This is simply a joke. The officer there, as I mentioned, was using ammunition made out of beeswax and laundry detergent. Remember, according to the official timeline, 2 minutes and 33 seconds after he'd been dropped off by Uber, Nicholas Cruz, the accused, like Adam Lanza in Sandy Hook, walked began shooting where he was seen by teacher Stacy Lipple, dressed in full metal garb, helmet, face mask, bulletproof armor. So we're to believe in the space of 2 minutes and 33 seconds, Nicholas Cruz managed to walk from the curb where the Uber driver had dropped him off to the east stairwell, put on full metal garb of helmet, face mask, bulletproof armor, and began shooting. Where would he even get all this equipment? If you believe that, you probably also believe in the Easter Bunny. How bad, how bad, how bad. Here we get Sarah Grace Wolfe from tweeting. My reaction when somebody tells me to believe the official story, and she's showing a photograph of Robbie Parker, who the day after the shooting came out of the building all jocular laughing till he looked and saw the assembled press. Then he paused and hyperventilated and began talking in solemn tones about the loss of his daughter Emily the day before, but had the presence of mind to mention her donation website. Sarah Grace tweets, sorry, our guess at this point. I'm not going to believe that anyone actually dies in these false flag events without personally seeing and evaluating a dead body. If everyone took this stance, none of this would even be able to happen. Start believing anything that comes out of the mouths of known liars. She's got it exactly right, in my opinion. Exactly right. I'm very impressed that she's put it together so well, because these are fraudulent events, totally fake events. We're about, of course, to hit our break, and I have much more about the timing of all this just before an NRA convention in Houston, so they could hassle the Republicans where Trump was going to speak for being, you know, brutal and heartless by not taking into account the lives of the dead children. But it's all completely fabricated and fake. Very, very, very embarrassing, sad to say. So here we are, glad to be here, glad to be giving you an update. We have events in Ukraine where Russia is mopping things up. Zelensky's getting more weapons. The U.S. is becoming more deeply involved. Do not be surprised if we find ourselves in World War III, compliments of the Biden administration and NATO, which are being relentless in provoking the bear. Very bad idea. We'll be right back.
Like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Hey everyone, it's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Amazon banned my book so you wouldn't learn what really happened at Sandy Hook. It was a FEMA drill presented as mass murder to promote gun control. Then they sued to shut me up, and the Wisconsin courts played along. I have the proof and the law on my side. What I don't have is the money. They want to do to us what they've already done to Canada. Take guns, impose tyranny. It's on the way with Remington's help. First insurance, then registration, then confiscation. I'm asking SCOTUS to stop it. GiveSendGo.com, funding Fetzer. Check it out. This is for all the marbles.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
Radio every Wednesday 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
So here we have to consider the timing. They not only want to distract from all these events, but also Buffalo, which was so amateurish. No one who even looks at the video can be possibly taken in. It's more like a video game than it is a reality. And in fact, Brian Davidson did a brilliant analysis frame by frame you can find on my BitChute channel, Jim Fetzer, by scrolling down where he applied to research techniques from the internet, shadow analysis, ascertaining that as the first woman who happens to be white is falling to the ground, she casts a shadow, which shows that, in fact, that was taken at 1:18. Well, the police only show up, what, at 3:32. So this, it appears what we got there is a rehearsal video. And you can see it, there's no cartridge ejection. You don't hear any metal falling to the ground. You see people are falling before they've been shot. You got bodies on the ground before he's even come in. This is just like New Zealand. His weapon is all painted up like New Zealand. He does a point-blank shot into a cranium that should have blown apart like a melon, but only the effect of wind. So I think they wanted also to distract from the Buffalo false flag because it was so paltry and pathetic. But Americans, I think, are getting weary of all these phony stage events. They had to do it now, I think, because summer recess is upon us. We aren't going to have kids in school, so they're not going to be able to stage any phony school shootings. And it's right before the NRA convention. What could be better? So here we have anti-gun protests rock NRA convention held days after the fatal shooting. The gun lobby's annual meeting was beset by demonstrators, but it was only a handful, really. They're holding signs, protect kids, not guns. Anti-gun protesters picketed the NRA's annual convention in Houston, demanding the government ban so-called assault weapons. Despite coming just 3 days, the speakers and attendees insisted they would not surrender the right to keep and bear arms. A teenage gunman shot and killed 21 people at an elementary school, or so we are told, before being shot dead by an off-duty Border Patrol agent. Meanwhile, 280 miles away in Houston, the NRA kicked off its annual convention. It always draws criticism from anti-gun groups. Several hundred protesters. Now that's a drop in a bucket. That's probably more than Biden got at all of his campaign appearances leading up to the 2020 because they kept him in a basement. Even though they had a joint appearance with Kamala Harris just 2 days before the event in Phoenix, the total turnout to see Biden and Harris together, which you think would be a big draw, was exactly zero. Fewer than the fingers on one hand. Zero. And this guy is supposed to have won, you know, by the largest margin in American history. How dumb are we supposed to be? The event, which always draws criticism, attracted several hundred holding signs, accusing the NRA of having blood on its hands. Heckled attendees chanted shame at those entering the assembly. A group of children stood in silent protest with the names and images of those killed in Uvalde hanging from their necks. Meanwhile, another group carried a child-sized coffin around the convention. I mean, how bad is this? The protesters drew some familiar names from liberal politics. School shooting survivor turned activist David Hogg, who's the son of an FBI agent, who seems to have already graduated from Laguna Shoals High School before transferring to Parkland so that he could become a spokesman for the movement, who even acknowledged during an interview with CBS after the March for Our Lives held in Washington, D.C. just a few weeks later, which was allegedly inspired by the Parkland event, but where in Washington, D.C., to close down the roads, you have to submit a permit 180 days, that's 6 months in advance, which they had done. So 6 months in advance of the event, they knew they were going to have an event that would only occur 5.5 months later. I mean, give me a break. David Hogg admitted that he'd gone home, and then he realized he had a bicycle back to school because he didn't say it in this many words, but he knew there was going to be a staged event and he was to be a participant. Becky Pringle, president of the NEA, the nation's largest teachers union, rejected Republican arguments that teachers should be armed. More guns equal more violence, she told Reuters. Assault weapons should be banned. But as I've explained, the facts of the matter are precisely the opposite. I mean, this is just a part and parcel of the propaganda that has no foundation because, as I've already explained, it turns out that worldwide, the more guns, the fewer homicides. I mean, it's just incredible that we're getting this kind of bullshit, complete and total bullshit. That's all we're getting from the Democrats and the unions. I mean, for crying out loud. In the overwhelming majority of gun crimes, by the way, handguns, not rifles like the AR-15, are used, most of them owned illegally. In other words, we already have laws against them being owned. And by the way, there was a ban on assault weapons that made a negligible difference in the crime rate under Bill Clinton. That expired during Barack Obama's presidency and where he failed in attempting to have it reinstated. Since Biden took office, he has placed regulations on certain pistol grips, cracked down on the sale of untraceable ghost guns, but has not pushed Congress to enact a sweeping ban on any kind of firearm. Mark my words, they're going to try to do it now. Upstairs, my wife, who's addicted to MSNBC, was reporting all the efforts they're going to be made towards trying to induce 10 Republicans to join them. I'll tell you right now, it ain't going to happen. They need 10 Republicans to overcome the filibuster. It's going nowhere. The slaughter at Uvalde, the U.S. deadliest since Sandy Hook in 2012, has reinvigorated a nationwide debate on gun laws, with politicians, entertainers, even sport franchises demanding the Second Amendment be curtailed. This is just stupid. Speakers at the convention were adamant banning guns isn't the answer. Former President Trump condemned the deeply evil, violent, and mentally disturbed young men who've carried out a contagion of school shootings since Columbine in 1999. Ted Cruz blamed such shootings on broken families, absent father, declining church attendance, video games, and chronic isolation. If it were real, I think they'd be pointing to real causes. But they're all faked and staged. Barack Obama legitimized all these phony events by nullifying the Smith-Mutt Act of 1948 by means of the Smith-Mutt Modernization Act of 2012, where the Smith-Mutt Act of 1948 precluded the use of the same techniques of staged events, paid riots, and the like within the United States that had heretofore only been allowed without, just in time to bring us Sandy Hook. Meanwhile, Investors Watch blog published, the police are not your friends. During the Uvalde school shooting in Texas, parents showed up with guns and attempted to enter the building. Matt Novick tweeted, every cop in this video could be a hero tonight. Just write a little note and then do what needs to be done. Be a hero for once. You should really do it this time. If you're a cop and reading this, I believe in you. Do it. It's your one opportunity at redemption. Not only did cops with long guns have their tasers out ready to stop parents from saving their own children, it looks like the cops had a parent pinned to the ground. You can hear one person yell, what the F are you doing to him? Let him up. That's what was going on. Now get this. Biden suggests already having the federal government tear down Robb Elementary School in Uvalde and put up a new building. And by the way, one of my researchers told me right off the bat, doing preliminary research, that this Robb Elementary School appeared to be in deplorable condition, and he believed it had actually already been abandoned, as was the case for Sandy Hook. That school had been closed by 2008. I have a whole book about it, which, of course, Amazon banned because they don't want you to know the truth about what really happened at Sandy Hook. So here's Biden proposing. This is how you get the communities to participate. They need a new school. It's going to cost millions of bucks. Well, guess what? If you let us conduct a drill and present it as real, then we'll give you the new school. Joe Biden reportedly told State Senator Roland Gutierrez he's looking into having the federal government tear down Robb Elementary and replace it with a new building. Senator Gutierrez, who represents Uvalde, detailed the conversation he had with Biden during a television interview. The Democrat said Biden told him, we're going to look to raise that school and build a new one. Gutierrez warmed to the idea, saying, I can't tell you how many little children I've talked to don't want to go into that building. They're just traumatized. They're just destroyed. The senator added, Biden told him, I'm not going away. I'm going to bring you resources. We're looking to get real money for health care. Gutierrez interrupted a press conference with Governor Abbott of Texas Friday, demanding he call a special session of the Texas legislature to address a shooting. My colleagues are asking for a special session. You're getting a letter tomorrow. We've asked for gun control changes. I'm asking you now to bring us back in 3 weeks, Gutierrez said during the question portion of the press conference. He apologized for the interruption and claimed it was not a political stunt, but it was obviously a political stunt. I've been here for 3 days with all these elected officials. This county judge has worked his A off, the mayor, the city council. I don't know how to express the loss of the families I've spoken with, and I know you feel it too. And we have to do something, man. Your own colleagues are calling me, telling me an 18-year-old student shouldn't have a gun. This is enough. Call us back, Gutierrez said. The Texas Democrat Party issued a statement supporting him. Not one more child, not one more teacher, not one more Texan. We're proud of our Democrat leaders for standing up to Greg Abbott's lies every chance they get. And the Texas Democrat Party joins their call for a special session to ban automatic weapons, which it was not, and pass life-saving legislation to end gun violence in Texas. There are already laws against automatic weapons, have no doubt about it. I believe they go back as long as 1935, but Tommy guns. But believe me, automatic weapons are already illegal, so you can't pass a law to ban weapons you've already made illegal. Democrat gubernatorial candidate Beto O'Rourke also interrupted a press conference to yell at Abbott. Well, what happened at Newtown? It turns out that the school had been closed by 2008 because it was loaded with asbestos and other biohazards. It's been damaged by a hurricane. Turns out there was even a major flood in the area in 2007. Of which I was unaware when I published the book, but did further damage. We have a report from 2010 of a contractor who was visiting a friend in Monroe, who, unbeknownst to him, was making a visit over to Newtown to pick up a couple of student desks on the cheap for his kids to use at home. He went with him and said that school was in such dilapidated condition, the caretaker said he thought it was going to be torn down. So, they knew all this for years and years and years. This is why the school was abandoned. So what did they do? Well, they got a new school. And guess what? To replace their kindergarten through fourth grade school, which was Sandy Hook Elementary, where I did a survey at the time and found the average cost of an elementary kindergarten through fourth grade school across the nation was $7 million. They got 50 million. Think about it, 50 million. So what was this to be, the Taj Mahal of elementary schools? Well, if you look at it, it's unbelievable. They had to go so far out of their way to squander 50 mil. I'm convinced it was a money laundering operation. And remember, I even have the exercise manual. I publish it in the book. This was a FEMA drill presented as mass murder to promote gun control. There really isn't any serious room for doubt about it. Take my word. Outrageous. Outrageous. Completely outrageous. Meanwhile, we have the case for a case for defunding and abolishing the FBI has been made. America is not safe with an FBI in it. They aren't the, quote, good guys. They just aren't. They are a domestic taxpayer-funded Gestapo and lawfare terror organization. All they do is protect criminals and abuse law-abiding citizens. They are a protection racket. Defund and abolish the FBI, Timothy tweeted. And here's what he included. The FBI had sex tapes of Democrat mayors sleeping with a Chinese spy and kept them hidden. Knew Eric Swalwell was sleeping with a Chinese spy and kept it hidden. Had Hunter Biden's laptop and kept that hidden. But leaked a dossier they knew was fake to the New York Times in an effort to take down Trump. I think they got it all right. By the way, we have a very interesting brand new report. 16 vaxxed runners collapse in one race, and it's not weird at all because, shut up. The Brooklyn Half Marathon of 2022 took place on Saturday, May 21st. There are a couple of requirements you have to fulfill if you want to participate. In order to compete in the 13.1-mile race, you must be in peak physical condition. That's the first requirement. The second, relatively newer, is you must be fully vaxxed against COVID-19 to run the race. They set a new record this year. A grand total of 16 runners in peak physical condition collapsed during the race. Another of them died. You're wondering why so many collapsed? Now we have the answer. Global warming. Runners who participate in the Brooklyn Half must stick to a very rigorous pace in order to compete. Very fast runners and the New York Road Runners run in stages next to the marathoners and set various paces they must keep up with to stay in the race. I'm assuming you get booted if you don't keep up with at least the slowest pace. The fastest runners have to compete the race in 90 minutes or less. The slowest are allowed to compete have to do it within 3 hours. Or I like to think of it twice as fast as I can run. 22,000 runners participated last Saturday. 30-year-old David Reichman did not finish the race. He died from cardiac arrest. 16 other runners were hospitalized during the race. 5 had serious injuries. 8 of them had non-life-threatening injuries, and the rest had minor injuries, you know, the kind of minor injuries that require hospitalization. Due to the rigorous requirements to even enter the Brooklyn Half Marathon, the last time a runner died was in 2014. The last time they had 16 runners, total collapse, and have to go to the hospital was never. It's never happened before. Not to worry, though. Health officials are totally on top of the problem. They were immediately able to declare the reason 16 collapsed and one died, it was hot outside. The morning of the Brooklyn Half Marathon, it was 70 degrees. I walk in 70, 75. That's a very comfortable temperature. This is completely ridiculous. Probably because of all that global warming we're hearing about. If only more of us uppity Americans would start driving $150,000 electric cars, it wouldn't be 70 degrees outside at the Brooklyn Half Marathon, and we wouldn't have a record number of runners collapsing in the race. Because that's totally what happens when you run outside in 70-degree weather. They might as well call it heart attack weather when it gets that hot outside. In fact, that's so hot, you might be better off just resting in the shade instead of doing anything else outdoors. Be sure to put on extra layers of sunscreen and stay hydrated. Obviously, I'm being sarcastic. We all know what really happened here. These people didn't collapse because it was hot outside. They collapsed because they exerted themselves after they allowed doctors to inject them with the experimental COVID mRNA shots. Let's check these numbers out a little more. If you are a runner who's healthy enough to qualify for the Brooklyn Half Marathon, you have about a 0% chance of dying from the Rona. That's if you're unvaccinated. Even in a worst-case scenario, you would probably only spend about 3 days getting bed rest and taking cough syrup. But once you're vaxxed, you have a 1 in 22,000 chance of dying in the race from cardiac arrest and about a 1 in 1,400 chance you're going to the hospital. And let's not kid ourselves. Most or maybe all the runners who are hospitalized won't be running again anytime soon. They have heart injuries. Their lives are changed forever. Maybe 1 in 1,400 doesn't sound like such bad odds. But if you're the one, it's life-changing. You will never be the same again. We're heading into Memorial Day weekend, and it's going to be summer after that. It's going to be hot outside, much warmer than 70 degrees in a lot of places. Be careful out there in the heat, folks, because of global warming. What a beautiful summation of the situation. Absolutely fascinating stuff. Absolutely fascinating stuff. Meanwhile, Zelensky hopes a regime change in Moscow and blames to reclaim Crimea. This isn't even a comedy sketch. This is incredibly stupid. Ukraine's president wants to reestablish its pre-2014 borders and negotiate with Russia after Putin has been removed from power. Fat chance. Ukrainian President Zelensky said he wanted talks with a Russian president. However, He hoped the person would be someone other than Vladimir Putin. He also called for his country to reestablish its pre-Civil War borders. CNN's Fareed Zakaria hosted Zelensky for an interview at the World Economic Forum. This event was sponsored by the foundation of Ukrainian billionaire Viktor Pinchuk. In his introduction, Zakaria framed the war in Ukraine as Russia versus the world. Wow. Unbelievable. I think most of the world is paying attention, recognize Russia was in the right, or Vladimir Putin gave a magisterial statement about it on the 24th of February, explaining the reasons Russia was forced to intervene into Ukraine. You can find it on my blog, where he referred to the West as an empire of lies. He got it right. Fareed Zakaria's got it wrong. Zelensky indicated he was open to talks but wanted regime change first. This war will be over sooner or later. I'm sure there'd be some sort of peaceful process, some sort of talks. We'll be discussing the issues of who Ukraine will negotiate with the president, with what president of the Russian Federation. I hope he will be a different president. This is just silly. Talk about unreality. This is a guy who plays the piano with his penis. This guy is a complete, utter fraud. The idea that anyone takes him seriously is a joke. He's a comedian, but what he's saying here is not humorous even remotely. Zakaria asked Zelensky, will Ukraine fight until it takes all the territories it lost in 2014, referring to the breakaway Donbass Republic, Donetsk and Luhansk, and the Crimean Peninsula? He responded affirmatively. When Ukraine says it'll be fighting to regain its territories, it means Ukraine will be fighting until it gets all its territory back. It doesn't mean anything else. During an event last week at the WEF, former Secretary of State Henry Kissinger called on Kiev to cede territory to help resolve the conflict. Zelensky responded with harsh criticism of Kissinger, who has emerged from the deep past and said part of Ukraine should be given to Russia to avoid the alienation of Russia from Europe. It seems that Mr. Kissinger is 1938 on the calendar instead of 2022. The actor turned president also used the platform to plea for more weapons. We'll be right back after this break.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
If you think for 1 second that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourselves. Because we know who they are and what they do. This is what they do, and we must fight back. You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years.
to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. That time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence at the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Not giving up. Revolution Radio.
Amazon banned my book so you wouldn't learn what really happened at Sandy Hook. It was a FEMA drill presented as mass murder to promote gun control. Then they sued to shut me up, and the Wisconsin courts played along. I have the proof and the law on my side. What I don't have is the money. They want to do to us what they've already done to Canada. Take guns, impose tyranny. It's on the way with Remington's help. First insurance, then registration, then confiscation. I'm asking SCOTUS to stop it. GiveSendGo.com, funding Fetzer. Check it out. This is for all the marbles.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Let me say a few words about my SCOTUS petition, which you can download yourself directly from the Supreme Court website. It asks you to enter to search for, you know, the docket. Go for Fetzer v. Period Posner, Fetzer v. Period Posner, and you can download my petition, the appendices that support it. And you can even get my financials to see how I cannot afford an attorney, that I'm about $100,000 in debt for the past services I've had for attorneys, where you could be tremendous help if you believe in what I'm doing by contributing to me to clear the debt. These people have been good people. They've given me assistance, but I've reached a point where what I'm doing is pro se. The timeline, by the way, is the following. The respondent, Posner, has until the 21st of June to submit a response. Once the 21st of June has come and gone, then any response from Posner plus any amicus briefs that may be submitted on his or my side are turned over to the 40 law clerks of the Supreme Court. They analyze the case, summarize, and make recommendations to the court. If a minimum of four want to hear the case, then they issue a writ of certiorari, and we have a new round of briefing. They get all the records for the entire case, which are rather voluminous, to go through and schedule oral hearings. Now, there was a time when a pro se applicant could defend himself before the Supreme Court, but around 1997, they changed the rules, so that only attorneys can now present before the Supreme Court. Since I'm pro se, the court will appoint an attorney to represent me. In my opinion, the issues are so clear-cut, as are laid out in the petition, that I think this case is going to be decided on its merits on paper and not based upon any oral argument that may be given. It's possible some prominent figure might want to argue on my behalf before the Supreme Court. I mean, it's 30 minutes of fame before the Supreme Court. So it will not surprise me, especially when, as I see it, my case is a slam dunk. Well, I originally believed it was a First and a Second Amendment case because I was being denied freedom of speech and freedom of the press. It actually turns out that what I suffered from was an abusive summary judgment methodology in Wisconsin that allows the judge to decide what evidence or what facts claimed by the non-movement, the defendant, are or are not reasonable. If the judge determines that facts or evidence submitted by the non-movement are not reasonable, he can set them aside and discount it. Thus, he set aside. I proposed to introduce all the evidence I had. You know, we had porta potties in place, pizza, bottled water from the firehouse, a sign everyone must check in, parties with name tags on lanyards, parents bringing children to the scene where no parent would bring a child to the scene of a child shooting massacre, that the FBI in its consolidated crime report for 2012 showed no murders or non-negligent manslaughters in Newtown for 2012, where if the shooting had been real, that should have been 26 or 27, because Adam Lanza killing himself, as claimed, is classified as a murder of a person of themselves, but the number is zero. The FEMA manual for the exercise, showing it was to begin at 8 a.m. on the 13th and end at 11:59 p.m. on the 13th to be evaluated as a live event the following day, when we had no surge of EMTs, no string of ambulances, no medevac helicopter called. Triage tarps were put down, but no one dead or wounded were put on them. The parents weren't even allowed to see the children. They were identified only basis of photographs, where I'm convinced that's because they only existed in the form of photographs. There was no evacuation. According to the Stephen Sadinsky III final report on Sandy Hook, which it took him nearly a year to complete, I believe he delayed to wait and see how much evidence might come up that he would need to deal with in his report, knowing it was a stage fabricated event, that there were 489 students at Sandy Hook Elementary that day, which is, in my opinion, preposterous. But where there were, if you subtract 20, that meant there were 469 who needed to be evacuated. Well, Dickinson Drive was so clogged, you couldn't have got a bus in or out there if you wanted. The state police declared that evacuation was taking place at specific locations and times in the parking lot. But we have dash cam footage showing nothing is taking place at those locations and times in the parking lot. Now, we're often told you can't prove a negative, but that's just silly. You can prove there's no elephant in your living room, which is a negative, by going to your living room and looking for signs of the presence of elephant. Finding none, you're entitled to infer that's because there's no elephant in your living room. If you go to the location and places where, at the times where evacuation is supposed to be taking place and see no signs of an evacuation taking place, you're entitled to infer that's because no evacuation was taking place. You know, as a whole case, it is bullshit. Sadinsky wasn't even able to create a causal nexus that tied together the alleged shooters with the weapons he's supposed to have used and the victims he's supposed to have killed. It was a complete forensic failure. I also mentioned that we had a policewoman rearranging kids in a line in the parking lot to get a better shot. There's no question about it. Shannon Hicks, the B-town, the Newtown B photojournalist for this tiny newspaper, has acknowledged taking them both. But in the photograph taken earlier, you see parents in the foreground, hands in their pocket, arms folded, while they rearrange the line from a little girl in a pink sweater and a short skirt at the front of the line to replace her with a little boy who's taller in dark sweater and blue jeans. It does make for a better shot. but it shows the whole thing as a complete farce. Well, it's fascinating that when the judge ruled I could not introduce all this evidence, even though it was spelled out in my answer to the complaint, but that we were going to focus exclusively on the death certificate, that he wasn't going to allow me to argue that nobody died at Sandy Hook on the grounds it was irrelevant to the accuracy or the truthfulness of the death certificate, which had been attached to the complaint, which, unlike the one I had published, had a file number, it had a town certification, it had a state certification, while the one that I published had no file number, no town certification, no state certification, where he said that even though both death certificates state the decedent died at Sandy Hook Elementary School on 14 December 2012 of multiple gunshot wounds, my evidence, no one had died at Sandy Hook, had nothing to do with the accuracy or truthfulness of the death certificate. I mean, talk about your legal absurdities. But it got even worse. When we were restricted to focusing only on the death certificate, there were already the two, the incomplete one I'd published in the book, the complete one that was attached to the complaint. My co-defendant, Dave Gaheri, publisher, secured an additional copy from the town. I secured an additional copy from the state. All four of these death certificates were different. As I argued, that was prima facie evidence of fabrication. How could you have four different death certificates for the same individual? Not only that, but I secured reports from two, not one, but two, forensic document experts, both of whom testified in the report that all four of those death certificates, including the one I'd published, were fake. The judge, however, under Wisconsin law, was able to simply set them aside because he did not find them to be reasonable. These were unrebutted expert testimony. And he went ahead and claimed there were no disputed facts in the case, and when indeed I'd been disputing right up and down the line, and ruled in favor of Posner. But believe it or not, when he responded to post-verdict motions, he laid out that everything I said was unreasonable. That was unreasonable to claim nobody died. It was unreasonable to believe Obama orchestrated. It was unreasonable not to believe Leonard Posner, whose identity I'd even challenge, because I'm convinced this is not Leonard Posner. This is another party whose real name is Reuben Vabner. I spelled this all out in court, but the judge would not give me the time of day. When I appealed to the 4th District Appellate Court in Wisconsin, they reiterated the same situation. They said it's not reasonable to dispute the following. And then they gave the official narrative that Adam Lanza had shot his mother and then 20 kids and 6 adults at Sandy Hook, blah, blah, blah. And then in virtually the next paragraph, they said, Mr. Fetzer, a Wisconsin citizen, denies all of the above. He says it was a FEMA drill to promote gun control, that nobody died, blah, blah, blah. And they said that my position was unreasonable. I mean, this is incredible. And when I carried it up to the Wisconsin Supreme Court, they turned me down. They turned me down. Well, initially I believed that I had a First and Second Amendment case within the confines of Wisconsin judicial through conversation with research colleagues, including one in Texas with extensive background dealing with summary judgments. He pointed out to me in Texas this would not have got through the door, that it would have dismissed immediately because the death certificate attached to the complaint was not the same as the death certificate I had published. And that in Texas, you have to take everything the non-movement, that is the defendant, says to be true, and then see whether or not the movement, in this case Posner, would agree to the non-movement's position, in which case there are no disputed facts. But that would require the movement, Posner, to agree that nobody died at Sandy Hook, which he obviously wasn't going to do, which meant it would have automatically had to go to a jury. So what I'm asking the Supreme Court to do is to recognize that the methodology for summary judgment practice in Wisconsin, and I substantiate it with a manual where a Dane County attorney is explaining to members of the judiciary in Wisconsin how Wisconsin practices summary judgment is a four-step process where you determine whether or not the movement, the person submitting the complaint, has a prima facie case or not. Then look and see if the non-movement has any reason to dispute it. Then you go back and see if the movement can't, if they can't adjudicate or iron out any differences in favor of the movement. In other words, it's lopsided. It makes a judge, in essence, an advocate for the plaintiff, which is just simply outrageous. So I'm asking the Supreme Court to vitiate my case. It was completely outrageous. I was even sacked with a huge fine for contempt of court when I sought to discover an impeachment witness against the guy who testified as Leonard Posner, because his real name is Reuben Fabner, and the judge came down on me like a hammer. So when the case went to, after having been found guilty of libel in what was in essence a non-jury trial masquerading as a summary judgment, when I went to the jury, we had 12 jurors, 30 or younger, all of whom professed they'd never even heard of Alex Jones. And the judge had allowed the plaintiff's attorney, whose name is Jake Zimmerman, and his colleagues, he had three different firms and like six different attorneys on his side, to state that I had been held in repeated contempt of court, which was very biasing. When I was put on the stand, I was asked about the death certificates, and I confirmed with the court, am I under oath? And of course, I was under oath. So I said, well, these are fake death certificates. And the judge flipped out, cleared the courtroom, and reprimanded me for not lying under oath. Kevin Barrett did a brilliant job. He was there and published a piece about Jim Fetzer's Stalinist-style show trial. Truth teller, you know, is, taken to court and lambasted in a phony trial. Well, brilliant piece on Oons.com review. Look for Kevin Barrett, Jim Fetzer's Stalinist-style show trial. You get a sense of the flavor of it all. So not only did the jury award $450,000, but I was held in contempt a second time, and the judge awarded attorney fees, even though in Wisconsin that's not the practice, even though Posner himself had testified he had no attorney fees because they were acting pro bono. Get this, another $650,000. So $1,100,000 for basically reporting what I took to be the truth about Sandy Hook. And I'll tell you, I'm not getting any serious feedback about the book. People agree I got it right. Even, I dare say, I'm given to understand participants at the Sandy Hook Grill like the book because I got it right. If you want to see a nice review where the book is temporarily out of availability because of this decision, even though I released it for free as a PDF after Amazon banned the book and had been downloaded millions of times, the exact number I cannot guarantee, but where they use this defamation to go after those websites that were releasing it for free to threaten them with legal action that they'd be held in contempt if they continue to release it and basically dried it up. I'm asking the Supreme Court to reverse all this, to get rid of my suit. It would vacate the judgments. If they send it back to court without any doubt, they're not going to file again because I would not have the same judge and I would be able to handle it in a proper way if the court has, in fact, change the methodology. I'm inviting the court to correct the methodology for summary judgment across all 50 states. In fact, it's because of the differences between the states in summary judgment methodology, where I cite Texas versus Wisconsin, that there's a federal issue here. I believe had I stuck within the confines of Wisconsin as a person, Second Amendment, it would never have been put on the docket. So it is on the docket. I think I've argued it well. You can read it for yourself. And if you believe I'm worthy of your support, go to givesango.com and help me get square with the attorneys who've assisted me up until now. And if you have any doubt about my financial inability to deal with it, download my petition to be treated as a pauper, where you have to lay out all your financial situation in front of God and everybody right there on the court docket. And if you think this is a guy who deserves a few bucks to defray the legal bills, where he's now got this case before the Supreme Court that could make a difference across the nation, if you want to throw in a few bucks, that would be fantastic. And let me say, a retired professor of law who reviewed my petition told me, he said the only weakness is no one can believe that the judicial practice in Wisconsin could be this bad. When I wrote back and said to him, but Jack, I'm quoting from their own decisions. And he wrote back and said, well, this is unbelievable. Basically, even a first-year law student would know better, that the corruption is unbelievable. And during a subsequent phone conversation, he explained to me that the biggest judicial problem in America is the abuse of summary judgment. So I think that the court is going to like my petition, that there's been a long-standing problem with summary judgment, that this is exactly the right case to deal with it. I even cite Miranda here, where a previous pro se applicant had had a ruling that led to every arrestee being advised of their constitutional rights against self-incrimination and so forth because of the Gideon case and the Miranda rights and everyone having the right to counsel. I believe this case may have a similar effect by correcting a malpractice related to summary judgments across the United States. So if any of that appeals to you, go to givesendgo.com/fundingfetzer. Don't put a slash at the end of Fetzer. Just givesendgo.com, funding Fetzer, no slash. Check it out. I need to update it because right now it doesn't report. It gives a preliminary sketch about why I thought I would be arguing the case until I realized that it was a difference between Minnesota's hopelessly flawed summary judgment methodology and that of other states that was an issue that would deserve the attention of the United States Supreme Court. Meanwhile, I'm going to open the phone lines here, 540-352-4452, 540-352-4452, 540-352-4452. Well, I add one more report coming from the Epoch Times, which is a really good publication. I highly recommend it. Looming price hikes on food set to hit Americans this fall. Higher inflation could force Fed action, leading to a deeper recession. Get this. In its efforts to contain inflation, the Federal Reserve has launched what many expect to be an ongoing series of interest rate increases, which are already taking a toll on stock and housing markets, with job losses likely to follow. As weary as Americans have become from paying record high gas and grocery prices, another round of price hikes is making its way through the food supply chain and is expected to reach consumers this fall. People don't realize what's fixing to hit them, Texas farmer Lynn Bugsy Allen said. They think it's tough right now. Wait until October. Food prices are going to double. The 8.8% increase in food prices Americans have already seen does not take into account the dramatic cost increases farmers are now experiencing. This is because farmers pay their costs up front and only recoup them at the point of sale months later. Usually, what we see on the farm, the consumer doesn't see for another 18 months, said John Chester, a Tennessee farmer of corn, wheat, and soybeans. But with the severity of these cost increases, consumers could feel the effects much sooner, particularly if weather becomes a factor. Lorenda Overman, a North Carolina farmer who raises hogs and grows corn, soybeans, and sweet potatoes, said the spike in fuel costs have put her farm into the red this year. Nothing that consumers are paying is going to bridge the gap for farmers right now. The prices have now hit have not hit the grocery stores yet, but expects they will by the end of summer. Much of the cost of food hinges on the price of oil. They have no electric trucks delivering that food, and there are no electric tractors. It takes diesel to run all of this. Chester said that the fuel and fertilizer together make up 55% of his total cost. The price of diesel has more than doubled from $2.50 per gallon at the end of 2020 to more than $5 per gallon today. Farmers say the cost of fertilizer and oil derivative has tripled, in some cases quadrupled. When you look at the machinery that uses diesel, it's farm equipment, it's railroads, and it's truckers, said Daniel Turner, executive director of Power of the Future, an energy advocacy group. Diesel moves all of our goods. It grows our food. From cargo ships arriving from overseas to trucks or trains getting those goods across the country. All those things now have added costs that will be sent to the consumer. That surge in food and energy costs is very demand destructive for U.S. households, said Joseph LaGuardia, chief economist at Natixis, a European bank. If you have to pay a lot more money for your food to heat and cool your home or put gasoline in your vehicle to get to work, there's less money available elsewhere. Price hikes in gas and food will leave Americans with less money to spend on other goods, which will reduce demand and have a knockout effect on the wider economy. Economic reports are indicating Americans are already unable to keep up with inflation. Household savings fell to the lowest in 14 years as people struggle to maintain their standard of living. Credit card debt is hitting record highs. Retailers say they're preparing for more consumers to limit their spending to the bare bones basic. Call in 540-352-4452. Mitchell will field your call and get you on the air. Standing by right after this break.
Take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Ah.
join Revolution Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job, that Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes? That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, we have a note from the chat room picking up on how NBC and CNN interviewed two different crisis actors who are supposed to be fathers of the same girl in Uvalde. It's really too much. My two dads? I'll bet Father's Day was pretty tricky around that household. Who writes, these sick bastards being paid to do this should be strung up for their crimes like anyone else involved in these red flags, false flags. He's got it right. As you may have heard, they're trying to scramble to cover their butt when these calamities occur. There's something in the air here, pollen, like affecting my throat. I apologize. So they're claiming, how can you have two dads with one's your stepdad and one's your real dad? I myself came from a family in which my parents divorced and both of them remarried. So my mother and my stepfather had a half-brother of mine, and then my father remarried and had three half-brothers and a half-sister, which means I have brothers and sisters who are not related to one another. So I'm certainly familiar with dads and stepdads, but I think this is just a farce. They get caught up and they try to scramble. It's all such bullshit. And even have who appears to be Vicky Soto, who was that teacher who packed all those kids into a 3x4 bathroom where the door swung in, turning up to be one of the teachers in Uvalde. And this is not the only case. They got this woman named Donna Soto, she calls herself, leading the plaintiffs in going against Remington and Alex Jones, but she also played the role of Susan Bro in Charlottesville. It's just embarrassingly bad. And the authorities don't seem to give a damn. Nobody picks up on these issues. Mitchell, listen, I need help here given my throat. Could you add a few thoughts of your own to all of the above? Mitchell, can you join me here? Are you still with me? Well, in Mitchell's absence, I'll just continue to report. As monkeypox, right? The new virus du jour. You've heard of the soup of the day, where we're going to get a virus of the day. And it's going to be monkeypox. Guess what? Bill Gates and the Gates Foundation, the WHO, farm exec, took part in a monkeypox pandemic simulation. Gee. Isn't that remarkable? Okay. Here, Mitchell, join the conversation.
Oh yeah. Hey, Jim. It is absolutely remarkable considering the revisions that, you know, whether it's the NIH in the UK or whether it's the World Health Organization or whether it's the CDC and the National Institutes of Health, magically monkeypox has become horrible. And you must be quarantined for 3 weeks instead of 10 days or 5 days or whatever. It's absolutely laughable, you know, particularly that this latest outbreak of monkeypox is essentially associated with a fetish festival that happened in Europe, and it seems that everything spread out from there.
A fetish festival, Mitchell. Tell yes. me more about this.
Well, I don't know. I can't say. There are some things that I'm not experienced in, and, you know, fetish festivals happen to be one of them.
Tell me, what kind of feedback are you getting about this latest fake shooting down in Texas? You getting much action? I mean, is anybody being played? Anybody being taken in? Anybody think it's real?
I think it's real.
You do?
Yes, I do. I can't lie. You know, I just think it's a shame the way between the news media and the people that want to, not yourself, but the people that are providing the information to everybody, that they do it in such a manner that is not clear and concise. And so often that leads to such stupid discrepancies. It is logical, considering that today, the federal government, the U.S. government, only about, 20% of people believe or have trust in the federal government, but 50% of people will believe in ghosts. And that is the status of where we are with the reliability, the honesty, of what people believe coming from our media today, our mainstream media. And this is, to me, this is all an extension of it. It's a sad thing because we can't trust a damn thing they say. And everybody has a different viewpoint on a topic or an idea. And when that all gets thrown in the mix, the next thing you know, we are going down the rabbit hole. And there, you know, the media, the New World Order, and everybody else that likes to discredit our communities, they cheer it on. So, you know, I don't know. To me, I call it like with QAnon. Was to me, you know, I think it was pretty clear by now for hopefully most people will understand that QAnon is essentially a counterintelligence program, you know, run by the federal government, you know, to stifle rebellion against the federalist system as the federalist system turns itself over to the New World Order. So, you know, we have layers and layers of problems, and a lot of it does have to do with trust and honesty. And because we've all been burnt by the media and the government many, many times, and that has cost hundreds of thousands of lives, American lives, let alone millions of people around the world, because our government and our media is essentially a captured entity, and we can't trust it. So this is how we end up where we are today. It's terrible. It's just terrible to me.
What do you feel about these other shootings? If you think this Uvalde is real, which I got to admit surprises me somewhat, Mitchell, what do you feel about Sandy Hook, the Boston bombing, Parkland, Charlottesville? Your thoughts there. Do you also think those were legit?
I lean towards the side that they did happen. But the problem is, as I have said before, there is so much disinformation and misinformation put out by the government because they don't want, for example, Sandy Hook. Okay. You know, I hate to get into the argument of whether Sandy Hook is real or not. What I prefer to talk about when you get to Sandy Hook and the elephant in the room is the failure to provide really a security at the school, and that the politicians and everybody else are just trying to figure out a way so nobody will ever ask that question. Nobody will ever hold them accountable. It's kind of, to me, it's parallel with Hillary Clinton and what she did to Donald Trump and what Barack Obama and the FBI picked the ball up and carried it. And essentially, you know, committed, to my opinion, high treason and sedition against Trump, that it is essentially the same. It is the same idea where government officials are so interested in finding either a fall guy or a conspiracy angle or something that they can let the media run wild with, while they essentially sit back and hope nobody ever asks the question, you know, what about the security that should have been there? What about the failure of the political system that has again and again and again failed all this time? So it's all, to me, it's a way for them to allow themselves to be not held accountable by essentially withholding pieces of information, putting out pieces of false information, you know, and then letting the people like myself and you and others that don't trust a damn word they say, they lead us into a rabbit hole and the real problems are really never addressed. And of course, well, let's not forget, you know, the Democrat Party and their motto, you know, that, God, what's his name from Chicago? No crisis left behind. No crisis goes to waste. And to destroy the psychology of an entire nation, it means you have to fracture it. And how do you do that? You use media and propaganda. You use people against other people. And, you know, so I'm here to provide information. You know, none of these places are my kind of hill to die on, so to speak. Okay. Now, if you would go Trump-Russia collusion, because I have really, like you and your story, I have really investigated that. I have really dug down into it as much as I could possibly could. And I myself am psychologically and I'm invested in that. And I think because what we do is, you know, we can go along all the way along and then we have one misstep and then everybody points to that misstep as being everything that anybody has done in the past as being invaluable or not worthy or something. And, you know, we live in this world where it really is, you know, this Stanford Milgram prison project world where, you know, we are actually without us, while we discuss all this stuff, the New World Order is essentially trying to shut down transportation for mass transit for people around the world, you know, through this global climate crap push. And, you know, it's as if everybody has already kind of got their gilded cage And now the World Economic Forum, you know, the Trilateral Commission, the Bilderberg Group, the Council on Foreign Relations, they're shutting the door to the cage that that the world is in. And, you know, I think just so many of these things, while they drive so much emotion and so much energy and so much all of this other stuff, you know, we have to really put them in context as real mass shootings at schools. There's been 13 since 1960. And yes, a lot of them have happened since Barack Obama was president. And, you know, that does ask the question, you know, were they false flags? Or because what we see in society in general, that we're seeing the unleashing of violence in society, that the rule of law is not protecting really people anymore, and that people have lost this faith and idea of the rule of law and psychology, and it's just so much going on all at one time that you really can't. It's like trying to pinpoint one spot on this graph that's going up and down and then escalating. You kind of just have I have to step back and look at the escalators, as I call them. You know, the BLM was active before George Floyd, but they did not have a catalyst like George Floyd. And that caused a severe uptick in not protesting, but in violence and looting and murder. And then we went through that kind of a cycle, and then it calmed down. Now we're entering into that other cycle. And I have said this on my morning show, and people may not think about it, that Will Smith, when he slapped Chris Rock, that was a subconscious ghost signal. Especially when he came in and said, well, I was butthurt because he talked about my wife's, you know, hair disease. And, you know, that unleashed a escalation in the minds of people that we've been seeing again, this escalation of violence. And of course, it's coming right into the election summer. So there are so many things that are going on. You know, I look at so many of these things as small compared to the big game. They're catalysts that are used in emotional tools to drive people on topics. But in the end, they are small pieces of the overall game, if that makes any sense.
Well, this is fascinating. I'm surprised, but
oh, that's okay.
Man, you know how I believe in everyone, freedom of speech, and
absolutely.
My God, you know, I am doing the course right now on conspiracy 101, critical thinking and conspiracy. Conspiracy theories, and
well, that's a must. Noticed, Jim.
Say again.
Well, college courses like that are a must, because I really don't believe, you know, one of the things that's sorely missing in college that should be a required course is some kind of analytical, not only reasoning but arguing. Course that should be a mandated course, you know, that somebody should have to take just for the simple fact that if you don't know or understand how to reason logically through something, and that you're always driven with emotion, you can't think clearly. I mean, you know, that, and that is, I think, part of the diametric that, you know, they want you to follow. They don't want you clearly thinking, what they want you to rely on that subconscious bias programming that they have instituted through repetitive means. And, you know, we all understand, you know, there's key words in our brains that when we hear those key words, we, our subconscious, our thoughts, everything is kind of already set. It's hard for us, you know, to, you know, when you think child molester, okay, you think bad person, you know, and then you think somebody says Democrat or Republican, I always think shyster, crook. And, you know, there's other people that think they're my leaders. And that goes to the, you know, the instant thought that they have that is the base psychology. And so much of what we have to do, you're me and you, is to figure out a way to get through that base programming and at least corrupt it a little, if that makes any sense.
I'm just discovering my How to Spot a False Flag is on in Russian. It's available
there
on our YouTube. Go, God, I love this. Fascinating. This is with Dr. Catherine Horton, that they got all four parts of it on our YouTube. Our YouTube. I love this. How to Spot a False Flag, Professor Jim Fetzer, Part 1, Episode 4. With Stop 007, that's Catherine Horton's email address, and she's got a website. I tell you, everybody, see if you can find this. Our YouTube, How to Spot a False Flag, Part 1. I was looking because I was going to recommend everyone to go to my 65 shows on my blog at James Fetzer, but it turns out that the part one has been taken off YouTube for violating hate speech. Of course, that's all purpose. Anytime you publish the truth, they hate the truth, so they block it out. But it's on our YouTube. Oh, God, I love this. And I'm looking at part one, and then if you go down the margin, you can find part two and so forth. It looks like it's all there. I'm ecstatic. So I'm going to update my page there so you can see. With Catherine Horton, it was very, very interesting, Mitchell, because it's like my interview with General Albert Stubblebine, who'd been in charge of all U.S. military signals intelligence, including photographic, about all the evidence I had that none of the commercial planes had crashed on 9/11. Well, I went through all four of them. And General Stubblebine not only agreed with all four, but gave me additional reasons I was right. Here we have Catherine Horton and I doing this four-part series, and she gave additional reasons why I was right. I mean, I think she's wonderful. I'm going to update this now. I'm going to do that right after the show so you can see how all four of these parts with Catherine Horton, wonderful. I did not know. It was on rutube.ru/video/ how to look for how to spot a false flag, Professor Jim Fetzer, in four parts on rutube. And I just add, anyone who's interested in, you know, mastering the techniques of investigation, You can sign up at any point for my Conspiracy 101 Critical Thinking and Conspiracy Theories at mixandstream.com/critical-thinking.html. All the classes are there on video, so you can actually watch them at your leisure. Or the course materials are all made available, compliments, when you enroll in the course. Now, there is $150 for the class, $150 for the class, and you can, it's the equivalent of $10 per class, which I dare say is pretty much of a bargain. Mitchell's just put up two. He's got another at BitChute, all four parts For Catherine. Oh, I love this. Thank you. Yes, Gus Chambers was putting up my... Very, very good, Mitchell. Very good. Very good.
Well, that was from, I believe that was from Rudolph in the chat room.
Excellent, Rudolph. Thank you so very much. Excellent, excellent, excellent. On bitchute.com/video/ EKMFAXZCLBEP. I'll put this in the, I'm going to put this in the archives for the description for this show. When I put it up on my BitChute channel, you'll be able to go to all four episodes there. And I'll also put the R YouTube. Mitchell, thank you. Thank you for coming alive. A sub pollen or whatever in the air.
Oh,
in my
you're
throat.
Welcome, Jim.
Yeah. Really, really. And I've got two guests for Wednesday. One is a short take on a new book that deals with false flags. And the other is a much longer report on what happened in Texas that we're going to get into it in fairly thorough detail. So I'm looking forward to featuring both of my guests on Wednesday. So thank you, Mitchell. Thanks, everyone, for being here. This is Memorial Day. And, of course, as a former Marine Corps officer, I certainly am grateful to the nation for having a day that honors our veterans. Meanwhile, bear in mind, you want to spend as much time as you can with those you love, because literally, literally, we do not know how much time we have left. I am going to embed How to Spot a False Flag, the four parts, with Dr. Catherine Horton in the description for the show today. You'll find it at BitChute channel Jim Fetzer later today. I'll be putting it up in just minutes from now. So thanks, everyone, for being here, and I look forward to seeing you all Wednesday. And a special thanks to Mitchell for joining the fray for this last segment, my friend. Thank you so much. And Semper Fi, Mitchell.
Semper Fi, brother. Amen. God bless all our troops. All the troops have passed and died for our freedom.
That's right, if we can only keep it.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven, Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here, Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyal? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty! Oh, give me death!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence...